Well, hello everyone, this is the Courtside Diaries podcast for the EuroLeague Final Four. I am Sebastian Komnianos, and with me tonight I have Lewis Glenny, Edin Memitz, and Rafael Zamorano. Some of them you might know, some of them you might not know, but I'm just going to pass the ball to them and they will introduce themselves to you. So, Lewis, tell us about you. I think you have a very interesting basketball story.
Yeah, so I'm Lewis, originally from Scotland, but I've been stuck in Spain, specifically now, Barcelona, for far too long. And I'm a glutton for punishment. I'm a Juventus man through and through. So, Forza Peña.
Nice, nice. How was the game today, this evening?
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Best team in Spain. Sorry, Rafa. Best team in Spain.
Nice. Nice. So, what got you hooked with EuroLeague in specific?
Honestly, I have no idea at all. When I moved to Barcelona, there was the FC Barcelona, now Lassa, are the big team. So, got to a few EuroLeague games, then family ties to European basketball, and I can't get rid of it. It's a horrible addiction.
All right. So, Mr. Memitz. It's your turn now, I think.
My name is Edin, and I'm from Montenegro. Probably, hopefully, the home of another EuroLeague team next season, if we complete all the requirements Mr. Bartomeu requested. I got pretty early into basketball. I used to train it. I wasn't very good. I switched to something I was good at, so now I just cover basketball and write about it. I'm also into NBA draft prospects from Europe, young players, and basically all things Adriatic region go-to person.
great. So any specific moment that got you into European basketball more than the NBA, for example? Like, do you have any strong memories?
Not really something that drawn me, just the game itself. I grew up watching the games of national team, first Yugoslavia, then Serbia, Montenegro, then our own. This region always had a rich basketball history. People here understand, live and breathe basketball. So it's kind of natural to get drawn into this in whole. Full circus around basketball.
That's true. And now I think it's time for the only person on this podcast that's going to have the joy of having a team in the actual Final Four. And this is Rafael Zamorano and his Real Madrid. So, Rafa, tell us about you and your team a little bit.
Well, there's not much else to say. I'm from Madrid, and Real Madrid was always my team, like Real Madrid family and whatnot. And yeah, as I started getting interested in basketball, I naturally gravitated towards Real Madrid, and that's mostly what I tweet about, because I really just don't have much time to watch that many other games. Lewis will enjoy knowing that I started playing basketball in Scotland, actually, where I moved for uni.
Wow.
Yeah. Backstory for another time.
But yeah, it's a story for a whole podcast, actually, you know?
Probably, yeah.
Or a series of podcasts.
So I played in Scotland for a bit, and now I'm back in Madrid, and obviously I can't play here because everyone's too good. So instead I just watch basketball now.
Do you think Atletico might set up a basketball team as well?
No, they actually did a long time ago. I think in the late 70s or something, they had a team or some sort of related team in basketball, and that the experiment only lasted like 3 or 4 years, and then they just got rid of it. I don't think they'll do it, to be honest, because it's not very profitable, and they struggle with finances a lot more than Real and Barca.
Yeah, that's true.
They probably play like Olympiacos or something.
Okay. I see we started the Olympiacos jokes already. That's good. So I'm going to stop this right now with the Olympiacos, and let's go into our first topic for the night. Let's talk EuroLeague, regular season and whatnot, awards. Or the tale of Alexei Zved not being included in the first team. I don't know what you guys think about this whole topic, but I think in one sentence and without using a lot of words for this, I think the awards are a joke, basically. And I think what happens is that EuroLeague just tries to keep every Final Four team happy with the basic, with the main awards, and then they try to make the rest top eight teams happy as well with the other awards. And I really don't get it. I really don't get it, because it might sound as a geeky topic, like talk about who is the best point guard, talk about who is the best small forward and things like that. But I also think it's a conversation that can promote the product itself. In the NBA, for example, there has been a huge conversation about the Rookie of the Year award. And, you know, it's a way to keep fans hooked. And I really don't get why they feel like they have to keep all the teams happy with all these awards, instead of actually awarding year-long performances and actually trying to be more serious about it. And I don't know what you guys think.
Okay, I've got one question. So Shved, definitely a first team. He wasn't the name I thought was left out, but who do you take out of the first team to play Shved, Dekolo or Kalathis? Or is that a stupid question?
I don't know. I don't think there are stupid questions, first of all. But I don't know. Does anyone else have any takes on this?
I think that Alexei Shved should be in the first team. Despite the general opinion that he kind of likes to privatize the game for himself, that he takes way too much shots, I really like his game, unlike Nando Dekolo. I just, despite him being maybe a better player than Alexei, I just can't familiarize myself with him. It's just this flopping and everything, and he also greatly benefits from the playmaking and ball handling duties that took away from him by Sergio Rodriguez than Alexei, who probably had to take whole team on his back and take those shots to keep them in the game. And even that wasn't enough just to keep them in the game. One slip and CSKA just got away.
Yeah.
In that playoff series.
Yeah, that's true. But this raises the question, where would Khimki be without Shved?
Probably not in the playoffs.
But I think so too. It might sound like a far take.
It's an obvious take.
Yeah, no, I mean, they have, like, roster-wise, they have very, very strong players and, like, individuals. But I think without Shved to carry them, I don't think they're a solid playoff contender team. Rafa, what do you think?
So I'm very firmly on the Shved should be in the first team bandwagon, I think. We had, I think, a bunch of us were involved in this conversation we had on Twitter.
Yeah.
With those Ella guys.
Yeah. And I get their point. I do think, and I think Edin said this as well, I do think Dekolo is the better player. And I think a lot of this comes down to how you define who is on the first team. For me, it's about who's more valuable. And I don't think there's much of a discussion that Shved has been more valuable than Dekolo this year. And like we don't have, or at least I don't have numbers for usage, but I assume Shved's usage has been insane. He basically creates every basket that Khimki scores while he's on the court, either directly or indirectly. He's played, I think, 400 more minutes than Dekolo, and that's a bit of a tricky number, because obviously Dekolo will play less if Cheska is blowing everyone out, and Khimki will need to play Shved a lot more if they're struggling. But still, like, it's 1,100 minutes against 700 minutes. It's
it's a lot.
It's a huge difference. Yes. And the rest of the guys from Khimki, like, I like their team, but no one can really carry that burden. I think Thomas Robinson played okay. I thought he was a surprise earlier in the season, but then he got injured. I really like Anthony Gill, but he's not going to just grab the ball and make something happen. I get all the minuses. Like, he is a chucker. He shot, like, relatively poor percentages. I think it was like 32% maybe, and like 49 or 50% from two or something like that. So, you know, not great, but like, he had to take them, and he made Khimki a playoff team when, like, I really don't think they would have been in the playoffs without him. So for me, he's definitely on the first team. And for me, the one that falls out is definitely De Colo.
Yeah, for me too. I agree with that quite a lot, quite strongly. Mostly though, I'm sad with absences like the one of Corey Higgins, for example. Because I think
he played an amazing season. He really kind of blossomed, got the bigger role.
Yes, yes.
Improved and defensively. It's really an unsung hero for this CSKA season and this first seed they got during the regular season.
Yes, I agree with that as well. And if you don't reward seasons like the one Corey Higgins had, the whole thing ends up being a story of the same people getting rewarded over and over and over again because they're the names that have to be rewarded. And I'm going to spark a lot of possible hate from fellow Olympiacos fans right now. It's the same with Spanoulis, for example. And I think, okay, Olympiacos was pretty bad this season, and especially the way it ended, but during the season as well. And it feels like Spanoulis was in the second team because one Olympiacos player had to be there. And it really makes no sense. It really makes no sense. It ends up being a repetition of the same faces and you know, the same names. And I don't know. I have some doubts about Singelia as well. As much as I like him, as much as I admire him a lot as a player, and I would love to have him on my team any day and night. I don't think he had that strong of a season to be in the first team.
No, I agree with you there. Like I had Yankunis in my first team. Definitely, I was going to take out Vesely.
Yes,
purely because I think he's a cherry picker. But that's me.
Yeah, yeah.
And probably Kevin Pangos deserved over any of them. And after Schwed, but it's all his season was also very strong, and I think despite that repeating awards, same players rewarding those stars, which are nearing the end of the road, same way the NBA rewarded Carmelo Anthony for a couple of seasons he spent in New York, despite him being in team that just didn't win just because of his name. I don't mind it. This game was always about stars, and stars gets rewarded and put in the first team despite not being the strongest season, just because they have that appeal.
My question, if I might swoop in, for you guys who watch Olympiacos a lot more often, because I only caught them like I think four or five times this season, is why did they pick Spanoulis and not Printezis, who for me is like a much better player and affects the game in a lot of different ways, and basically every single time I see them, or every single time I saw them rather. He was playing really well. He was playing really well on offense. He was playing really well on defense. He can do a lot of stuff. Constant impact. Like, for me, he was the best player on that team.
It hurts me a lot to talk about this. So if Luis or Edin have an answer on this, I would gladly just sit back and listen to them. But if not, then I can answer. So Luis, Edin, what do you think?
Yeah, I've got nothing. I actually had Princes maybe in the first team. That I would take Shingelia purely because Baskonia's resurgence in the second half of the season was incredible, but I have no idea why Spinoza is in that team, especially over. Yeah, no, I've got nothing.
Edin, what do you think?
Me neither. I was never really a big fan of either of them or Olympiacos for all the matters. It's just I never get the point of rewarding the same way, same type of tracker who turns the ball. Who leads the EuroLeague for five or six seasons already in turnovers, who just launches deep shot, and in the clutch time he just makes some of them, and somehow he's a hero.
I'm meeting here, you know. I'm having a very hard time, but yeah, go on.
No, I just got used to it. It would be pretty same to me. Whether he was or not him or Printezis, it was expected to be one of them. But if there was one of them, it's probably going to be Spanoulis. It's just going to be one of them.
Okay.
So it's going to be probably going to be.
So for me, and I have the saddest story here because I'm the Olympiacos fan, especially on defense, Printis was not just average, but he was pretty bad this season. And it's a trend that started from last season after the Final Four. He was horrible on defense in the Greek League Finals. And this, I don't know, this behavior, I wouldn't call it a behavior, actually, to be honest. I would just call it something that happens. I think this opens a pretty big conversation. This starts a pretty serious conversation about how the fitness coaches are doing their job at Olympiakos. But I think Printis has been playing the power forward position at Olympiakos for many, many years, on his own, pretty much. So if you look at the backups he had, it's players that shouldn't be there. And I think his fuel tank has kind of run out. And I think he's somehow trying to, make some kind of energy, perform some kind of energy management during games. And I think he's, Olympiakos being the very boring team that it is in offense, and Printis is being one of the two main factors of their offensive game, I think he gives everything on offense, and then on defense, he somehow expects the whole team defense to cover up for him. So for me, not even the third EuroLeague team, to be honest.
Oui.
It's that bad.
Have you guys do you have a clear idea of who your first team and your second team are?
I do, more or less, but there's not much I'd change. My second team, I'd probably only take out Spanoulis.
And put who instead of Spanoulis?
Pick who? I'm going to go controversial and go Sloukas.
Awesome. I like that.
Or Kyle Hines. I mean, he's the best defender in EuroLeague and he's not on any of the all EuroLeague teams. Doesn't make sense.
True.
And Lewis, would you keep the first team and second team as they broadly are, or would you have any switches between them?
Vesely would go down and De Colo, and I'd bring up Giankounis and Pangos.
Nice. I like that. And Sloukas had a very silent, but I think a very explosive season at the same time. And I don't know if you guys watched the first two games of Fenerbahce against Baskonia, but I think he was pretty vital.
He was incredible. He was in game two.
Yeah. Could be. Yeah.
Speaking of awards, I also think that defensive player of the year to Hines, it was kind of given to him by default, loosely.
I don't think
he was really at his best defense this season. It wasn't really, I don't know. I think he lost a step. There was also that injury. He wasn't there for a full season. I think there are better candidates for it.
So who would you pick?
I didn't think about it, but I think I think perimeter players are kind of getting forgotten about it. Defense played on perimeter, and the bigs that like to switch and guard players on perimeter, they kind of should get kind of the benefit of the doubt. While big guys in Europe, I don't know. I think maybe even Vesely or someone from Fenerbahce or Žalgiris deserved to get some consideration for Defensive Player of the Year.
I agree with the point behind your whole reasoning. I share the same belief. Best Defender Award is given to Kyle Hans, and I mean he's a master's defender. Of course,
I have no issues about him. I know he's an amazing defender, but this season I don't think he kind of deserved it over some other.
So what about the all EuroLeague teams, Edin, of yours? Like, would you keep them as they are?
Said I, I would just switch Nando and Schwed.
All right. I would take Sengelia out of the first team and the Colo, of course. I would put Schwed in, instead of the Colo. And then for Sengelia, I have no idea, to be honest. Maybe I would put Jan Kunas in and play with two centers just to mess things up. I don't know.
I went full small ball because I made the same change as you did. I would have had the Colo on the second team. I would have had Sengelia on the second team. And I would have had Schwed and Pangos in the first team.
That's super extra small ball, you know.
Well, yeah, but it's a, you know, like the first and second team all EuroLeague aren't necessarily position led,
yes,
as I believe it.
True.
So and for me, Pangos has had a fantastic season. Like I think he's had a better season than both the Colo and Sengelia, and more consistent as well.
Yes,
definitely. Yes.
Yes.
And my only other change is that I had Sengelia, Jan Kunas, De Colo, Rodriguez, and then I had Corey Higgins on the second team.
Yeah, me too.
That was my only and spoiler, but like I guess we've moved on in and out as well. But I would have said Higgins as defensive player of the season as well of the year.
So I'd agree with that. Yeah,
that's an interesting take. So do you guys think we can move on to the actual Final Four?
Yeah, no problems here.
Rafa, would you like to start with your Real Madrid, maybe?
Yeah, sure. I think sneakily, Real Madrid is sort of in a similar but not as extreme situation to Fenerbahce last year, where they've had plenty of in-season injuries to core players. Obviously, Yule was out the whole year, but also Ayon missed a lot of time. And Ayon is extremely important for Real Madrid with all his defensive limitations that are very well documented on EuroLeague Twitter. But he just basically he's the core big guy in getting the offense moving. He generates a lot of offense from the high post. And he just generally makes their pick and roll scheme work by just dishing out to the corners to shooters. Him being out was a huge change for Real Madrid. I don't know, like, you could argue that it wasn't necessarily that big a downgrade because Tavares was extremely effective during the regular season. But it definitely meant a change in the way they played because without Ayon, you just couldn't rely on pick and roll as much or at least not in the same way. So getting him back and Yule means, like, a lot of changes for Real Madrid, but it also means a lot more talent on the court. I still personally believe they're going to lose to Cheska. I think Cheska is just too good. But I think they have a very, very good chance. They have a very strong chance. And Yule has looked very good since he's been back. He looked really good in that Pau series. He's looked really well, like really good after that as well in ACB play. And it basically frees up Doncic to have a different sort of role and not have like the burden of creating every single shot for Real Madrid. And I think that's obviously it's extremely interesting. It resembles a lot more the Slovenia Doncic, pairing him with other generators. And honestly, one thing I remember seeing, because I was at the games against Panathinaikos here in Madrid. And one thing I remember seeing in game, I think it was game four, is whenever Lasso thought Real Madrid was struggling, he just put Yule and Doncic and Carroll on the court at the same time, and the two times he did that, they just went on a 10-2 run or something like that and just blew the game open because it's just too much shooting, too much shot creation on the floor, and it's very, very tough to guard, especially with a very good passing big man like Ayon and with shooters. Like they did it with Trey Tompkins as well, who's an excellent shooter. It's very tough to guard that at this level. I think they have a very good chance to upset Cheska, but I think Cheska is ultimately going to win. I just think they're too good. But I mean, I don't know how you guys feel. How does everyone else feel about this?
I think there is a pretty decent chance that Real is going to be in the finals. I still don't believe that Cheska is that strong, but I think there is room for Real Madrid to get in the rhythm early and just surprise them if they get hot, especially Yule and Doncic. And other, they kind of Doncic, especially, he was underwhelming shooting the three this season. We all know he's a much better shooter than that, but shot difficulty he had this season is kind of different than he had when he was in his campaign in with Slovenia. He had much better looks, and probably he's going to get much better looks when he goes to NBA. I don't know what's going to be his situation there. But I still think that it's much closer to 50-50 matchup that than Cska being the obvious favorite. I might be wrong, but I think Trey Tompkins might be the key to this to that game. I think he's a really underrated player. He will probably get poached by some other teams, offer a bigger role and everything, but he just allows Real Madrid to play a different style, different type, and he's really valuable to them. Even though he doesn't play starter or starter minutes, but he kind of got the chance with all the injuries. I still think that Cska has some demons and other things to explore. I think they're gonna try and put the game in much to play on the lesser points and to slow the game away, but I don't think they're gonna succeed. Real thrives in that fast-paced transition game of a lot of possessions, higher pace. Probably they are gonna insist on that, but I'm not sure will they hold on it. They also have a lot of offensive firepower, but not sure how much they can capitalize on it. Vorontsovich is important to them. So basically, two stretch fours are kind of both keys to their game. Despite those stars, we all expect they're going to perform and show out on the big stage like Final Four.
Yeah, I actually think, I get what you're saying about Tompkins, but for me, I think Real Madrid will take the game against Cska, but I think they're going to need a massive game from Anthony Randolph. That when they played round two in the regular season, Randolph had 15 or 16 points, but Cska can't match if he's on his game, that kind of athleticism and stretching at the forward points.
It's very interesting that you guys both talked about bigger players instead of Sergio Yule or Luka Doncic, for example. And I think this is a very interesting observation, that both of you believe that the game is going to be decided by not the obvious stars, but from other guys. And I think for this game, I think somewhere around December, like a very good friend of mine that has been playing basketball for quite a long time, he told me that Real had this run of six losses, I think, in seven games. They lost to Zvezda, they lost to Barcelona, they lost to Maccabi. And he told me if they grab two or three wins in a row, then I definitely see them in the Final Four. And then Real Madrid went on and won, I think, seven games in a row. And I think on this matchup, we have probably the toughest team of the whole EuroLeague in terms of what they had to go through to be where they are right now. And I think we have one of the weakest teams in terms of Final Four, you know, performances in the name of CSKA. So I think CSKA is the team that you want to play against in a semifinal. I also agree with Lewis and Edin. I believe Real Madrid is a bigger favorite to win this. So
I don't think he's a favorite. I think it's much closer. It's kind of even. Anybody's game is going to be. Just depends who manages to get in the rhythm faster or play the pace they would prefer.
Yeah,
not sure they are clear favorites in that particular match. They both have great players. Thing that I hate Felipe Reyes and all the things he does, and probably if I get a chance to punch Rudy Fernandez in the face, I would probably do it, but not that they take away from anything from they do, their quality, their experience in these situations. It's probably going to take part in this CSKA is pretty much a regular on every Final Four in the recent history. So it's not like they lack experience either. It's just going to be anybody's game. Whoever gets in the rhythm faster gets to manage to play his own game.
I think it's more of a 40-60, in my opinion, the way I see it. It's more of a 40-60 in favor of Real Madrid. Luis, what do you think? Where would you put the odds?
I would go right down the middle, 50-50.
50-50, I mean, okay.
Like, we're saying, like, the Colo, Sergio Rodriguez, Doncic, Sergio Llull, they're going to get their own. It's going to come down to guys like Rudy Fernandez, Higgins, Clyburn. Someone's going to have a big game to actually separate the teams.
Rafa, what about your odds?
I put it at 45-55 for CSKA. Okay. That was my initial point, is I thought it was really, really close. I think Real Madrid is coming in quite strong, and not just with their top players, but like their role players have kind of started getting getting good games in. Like Carroll basically destroyed Panathinaikos, and like Rudy Fernandez is playing really, really well the last couple months, and he's an extremely important part of Real Madrid. He's just a very good passer. He's a very good shooter. He still is a very good weak side defender. He's no longer a good one-on-one defender, but his rotations are on point. Felipe Reyes has been playing really well, but I don't know how much he's actually going to play in the Final Four. He already didn't play last year, so I suspect he might not play. Trey Tompkins has been playing really well, and I do agree that he might be one of the keys to this game. If that guy can space the floor and can punish any mismatch, if CSKA starts switching screens and Tompkins can punish that, Real Madrid is gonna probably have the odds of winning that. But that's the thing, right? These are two very good teams, and CSKA has their own role players who are really good as well. Like, these are both very deep teams, very talented teams. I'd put it 55-45 because of Chacho and Decolo. I just trust their shot making a lot, perhaps more so than I trust definitely Doncic's shot making on this, like, at this level. And I do trust Yul, but I don't know how well he's going to respond. Like, he's only been playing for basically less than a month. So that for me is the deciding factor here.
All right. So I want to ask you guys about the coaches. I want to ask you about Itoudis versus Lasso. But before I do that, I think it's a very interesting thing to talk about, how this Real Madrid team, in the faces of Rudy Fernandez and Felipe Reyes, has became a team that, although you didn't really like at the beginning, I think Rudy Fernandez is the number one guy that we all love to hate, EuroLeague-wise. And Felipe Reyes has this annoying way of playing and, you know, grabbing offensive rebounds and you know, giving breaths to his team and things like that. But I think as they have grown older, like, Rudy Fernandez has transformed as a player. Like, he does different things now. And to me, the way that he has accepted his new role without, you know, creating any problems in the locker rooms or without demanding to be transferred somewhere else so he gets more minutes, and, you know, without things like that, I have to give him huge respect for that. Like, it's something that that got my appreciation. From there, I would like to go to Pablo Lasso, who I think, by winning this series and the way he won the series against Panathinaikos, for me, before, he was probably, you know, an average coach. He was probably a coach that happened to be at a very good team, and okay, he's not very bad, so he's managing to manage his roster quite well. But now I think after this whole season, and after all the injury problems that Real Madrid had, and after the huge defeat they had to suffer in the first game against Panathinaikos, to me, now the ball is on Itoudis court, and it's Itoudis move to prove that, you know, he's up there with the rest of the top level coaches. Because there's always, like, I think it's the destiny of those teams. If you are the coach of any of these big clubs, you're destined to be questioned all the time. Are you? Is your team performing well because you're a good coach, or is your team are you a good coach before your team is very good? The roster is very good. So I don't know what you guys think, but I believe Real Madrid also has the coaching advantage. I mean, if we take out the actual rosters per se, I think Lasso is more possible to surprise the two of us than the opposite. I don't know. What do you think, guys?
This is probably the first team, first time I heard that someone actually praised Lasso in favor of a coach like Itudis, who demonstrated a couple of times that there is he's a really good coach, and despite having good players, that he actually can coach. He can call the plays. He kind of earned his way to leading the top team. I think he's doing pretty well so far. So I wouldn't write him off. I even think that he's a better coach than Lasso, but Lasso improved significantly. He is not that La Lasso nickname they gave him anymore. He works on himself and tries to improve as their team. And he also grew so much on me because of the relationships he has with his players. There is also an important part of coaching.
Yeah, players good
must
point.
Must like to play with you, play for you.
Good point. Good point.
So anyway, I think it's really important thing when you are a coach to be accessible to players, and other personnel can talk to you and pitch some ideas, and not to be like some other coaches. Not to name them now.
Lewis, what do you think?
Honestly, I had Lasso as an alternative option for Coach of the Year.
Great.
I know he was never going to get it because you can't take it away from the current superstar in Kaunas. But considering what he'd done with a roster, which, I mean, at the start of the season, they lost no Sergi, Kuzmic was gone as well. They didn't replace Othello Hunter. Anthony Randolph's hardly played. Then Doncic went down, and he still managed to get into the Final Four. I mean, he's still not the greatest tactically, but for me, he's got to be under consideration for the top coaches for sure.
That's a great point. Yeah, yeah. I didn't take it that far, but I cannot say I disagree. And I think this is also a great assist for our second semi-final matchup, which is Fenerbahce versus Žalgiris Kaunas, or Zeliko Obradovic versus Coach of the Year Šarūnas Jasikevičius. I have to say, it hurts a lot. It hurts very, very much because, you know, the Final Four being in Belgrade, the relationship that Olympiakos has with Red Star and the fans, you know, the whole like brotherhood thing of between the fans, and you know, the chance for this Olympiakos team to finally play at an arena that is like home. So it hurts a lot that my team is not there. If there was one team that I would love to see there instead of my team, that would be hands down Žalgiris Kaunas. Not only for this season, but I think starting from last season, the way they've built everything and the way they have structured the plan and the way they have followed it, the way they have managed to overcome all the difficulties that they had with, you know, the low budget, obviously, and players they signed that later left, or players they signed that didn't manage to be at the level they wanted them. Players like Lekavic is also leaving. I think it's
Leo Westerman as well.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, of course. So I think it's Žalgiris Kaunas this season, but again from last season as well. Although it didn't show that emphatically, but I think Žalgiris Kaunas as a 2.5 years project since Jasikevic arrived there. I think it's a story that you can talk and talk about, and you're always going to have points that you haven't talked about. If CSKA Real Madrid is a matchup that is very exciting to watch because of rosters and because of the way the teams have been built, I think this one, Fenerbahce versus Žalgiris, I believe it's going to be a pure joy to watch Obradovic versus Saras try to you know outplay each other coaching wise. And it's one of the very few times that I would love to see a Final Four matchup in a series format. So I don't know, best out of five probably. And this might sound weird because everybody believes that Žalgiris just wants to outplay Fenerbahce once and surprise them somehow and, you know, snatch the win, get away with the win. But I believe even in a series, they would have very, very good chances. I'm not saying they would be the favorite, and they're not the favorite, of course, even now. But I believe it's one of those games that we will talk a lot in the future as well. I don't know, what do you guys think?
I think that this is an interesting matchup, especially when you get the stories behind this Final Four of Željko Obradović coming to Belgrade, his home in Serbia, to play, to possibly win his 10th EuroLeague, to make history. On the other side, you have this hungry team of Žalgiris, who is probably the best feel-good story, which gives hope to those smaller teams that they can make it and make their way to Final Four if they do things right. Šarūnas Jasikevičius, tremendous season, even last year, that stupid rule that prevented him to take Barcelona over last summer. It's probably not going to be an obstacle this summer. From some of the sources I heard, it's practically a done deal, but I'm not really a firm believer in that, considering the place where is Žalgiris and where is Barcelona. Also, when you mention Žalgiris, you got to also note that they invested a lot in previous years in their facilities. They're probably one of the best in Europe, probably behind Real Madrid or something. These facilities are state of the art. It's probably NBA level, and it's kind of, from what I heard, it's real joy to train, and you basically have everything there. They invested in that infrastructure, and they brought interesting players. They even signed Royce O'Neal, who kind of had a breakout season for Jazz in NBA. So last summer, yes. But he backed out of that deal so he can sign in NBA. And you can just imagine how would he perform under Saras in EuroLeague when he had chance to start even in NBA playoffs. It was due injury of Ricky Rubio, but he did start, technically.
Yeah.
It's really impressive and amazing what Žalgiris did, but if you're going to ask me what's going to happen, I think that Fenerbahce will win. I'm not sure that it will be easy or they will kind of cruise over them. It's going to be tough, but I think there is slight edge. I give slight edge to Fenerbahce. Probably their experience and Obradovic experience when it comes to this level. His teams and his players, he kind of times those players to play their best and their hardest when it comes to the most important games. It kind of showed last Final Four. I think that's going to be this time also. Some guys who didn't play really good recently started to show out and play a little better. So I think they're going to be also kind of pumped up when the big time comes. I'm not really big fan of Wanamaker. I believe the other guards are going to step in and he's going to probably just do his job if he gets a favorable matchup against Mitzis, for example.
Yeah. True. Rafa, Lewis?
I actually, just what you were saying there, on my notes, I wrote the experience. I mean, you've got guys like Brandon Davies, Taban, Aaron White. I mean, last year they weren't even playing in EuroLeague. Now, EuroLeague Final Four, especially Davies and White, for me, Davies in the playoffs was incredible against Olympiacos, especially the first two or three games. And Aaron White is the closest athletically, I think, that they're going to get a match up with Vesely. And it was, I think it was the first game in the regular season, they both had some incredible highlight dunks, but they're both constantly running. It's going to be a serious problem, and they're going to need a big game from both of them. The problem with Kaunas for me is the bench. Misic can't match up with Wanamaker. He's too big. Sloukas is just too... Sloukas, there's no other way to describe it. He's just sneaky and always there. But I still think Kaunas take it. It's going to be close. I'm going to say Kaunas in overtime.
Kaunas in overtime?
Kaunas in overtime.
After this whole background that you set up with...
yeah, I'm saying it. I'm sticking to it. Kaunas in overtime.
That was a plot twist, you know? That came out of nowhere, you know? Nice. I like that. Rafa, can you match up?
I would really struggle to go to bet against Fenerbahce here. I think they just have too many guys. That series against Baskonia was really rough to watch if you were on Baskonia's side. I wasn't necessarily, but I kept wanting Baskonia to win another game, see if we could take it to five or whatever.
Yeah.
And man, those guys, they just, they're so well drilled. Like watching Wanamaker and Sloukas and Nunnally just go at every one of Baskonia's weaknesses and just attack like completely ruthlessly and stay in front of everyone, better or worse. They just weren't doing it. They just execute so well. And granted, so does Žalgiris. Like Žalgiris executes really well, but there is a talent and especially an athletic difference that I find very, very tough to ignore. Like if Fenerbahce, and especially at this point, because Lewis was mentioning that Žalgiris' bench is somewhat weak, so is Fenerbahce's. I don't think Fenerbahce has the best bench. But in a Final Four game, it doesn't really matter. You're going to play your seven or eight dudes. And the top seven or the top eight for Fenerbahce is incredibly athletic and incredibly talented. They're just putting Sloukas, Wanamaker, Nunnally, Datome, Kalinic, Vesely, Thompson, like, wow, that's a lot of really long, fast, athletic dudes who also know what they're doing and stay in their lanes and do what they're told. And, like, I very much struggle. Like, I really struggle to go against Fenerbahce here. And I honestly think they're going to win it all. I think they're going to take it again.
All right.
So, I find it very hard to go against them, especially because of Sloukas, man. Like, I've grown such a big fan of Sloukas. I never thought he would step up to be this. I mean, it's tough to call him dominant because he's not dominant through the 40 minutes of the game. He's just dominant in the three plays that you really need to get
when it matters most. Yeah,
yeah. The three or four players that determine the outcome of a game, that dude shows up, and he shows up in the most random ways. Like maybe it'll be sinking a shot, or just he will go by someone, or he'll get a random steal. He just shows up, and I find it very hard to go against them. I'd pick them to beat Žalgiris. I don't think it'll be easy. I think it will be, a win in the trenches, so to speak. But I do think they'll take it, and I think they'll take whoever comes out of the other side as well.
And then again, you talk about Sloukas not dominating for the whole of the game, but looking at his stats in the playoffs, for example, against Baskonia, he had 11 assists on the first game in 28 minutes, 6 assists in the second game in 19 minutes, 11 assists again in the third game, and then 8 assists in the fourth game. So in 4 games, he had 36 assists. And the other player that you forgot to mention, Rafa, Nicolò Melli. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Melli and also Guduric. Like,
yes.
It's just like their top 7, 8, 9 players, depending on how many players they actually do play, the level is very, very high. And that's despite Kalinic having an off season. Like, obviously, he was out with injury for a while and then he came back and he didn't really look like himself. I think he was the only Fenerbahce player that when I was watching those games against Baskonia, I thought this guy doesn't look good. He doesn't look like the Kalinic from last year. He doesn't I'm not scared of him. But even then, if you just don't play Kalinic and instead put, Melli and Datome and Thompson and Guduric and Nunnally as a who has played some very, very few minutes as like a small four, which is outrageous because he's kind of a two. But these guys, man, they're experienced, they execute, they're athletic.
I mentioned Melli in specific because I think he's one of the best examples of what you guys said about Obradovic's players just executing, you know. And he shot in the playoffs again. He had 6 out of 13 two-point shots, 6 out of 8 third-point three-point shots, and 13 in 14 free throws. And I think we can all agree that he didn't have any kind of breakout season after his move from Bamberg to Istanbul. He probably didn't sign, you know. He's not the number one name that comes to your mind when you think of Fenerbahce. But these numbers are ruthless, you know. It's like you look at these numbers and you probably think I have no luck against guys like Melian and Slukas. And this brings me to two very interesting statistical observations. The four Final Four teams and Baskonia are the five top teams in true shooting rate. So I think I saw a very big conversation on Twitter, NBA related, but I think it applies in EuroLeague a little bit as well.
Speaking to NBA, Celtics are up almost 20 points.
Wow.
Yeah, weird. People there were making the case that field goal percentages is by far the number one factor of winning games. You know, we can talk all about defense, we can talk all about assist to turnovers ratio, we can talk about all these different factors, but if you make the shots that you try, you're quite probable to win. And I say this as coming from the Olympiakos Žalgiris playoffs matchup, and every time there was a glimpse of hope for Olympiakos to try and come back, Žalgiris was making a shot that they shouldn't have made, you know, basketball wise, and they just executed. They just made the basket and you know they cut everyone's wings. You have no hope anymore. And then the other thing is Žalgiris and Fenerbahce are the two top teams in true rebounding rates. So we have two of the best teams in terms of both making the shots that they attempt and then rebounding the shots that they miss. So I think it's a battle of monsters when it comes to, executing the plan. So, again, I believe that this will come up to who has the best plan out of Obradovic and Jasikevičius.
Sure, I'm just looking at the stats just now. Sorry to cut you off there. They're literally, I don't know if anyone's looked at the team stats on offense for both teams. They are literally identical. It is terrifying.
Are they?
Yeah, that's so like 2-point percentage, 54, 42 for threes. And then 78 for Kaunas from the free throw, 79 for Fenerbahce. They're both averaging about 9.6, 9.7 offensive rebounds a game. It's going to be a game of turnovers.
Yeah. And this is probably a good point to talk about how Panathinaikos hasn't been in a Final Four in many, many years. But this year, Obradovic is there, Itoudis is there, Jasikevičius is there, and I don't know how it feels to be a Panathinaikos fan, to be honest. Like, I don't know. Like, there is certainly...
I really thought Panathinaikos had a shot against Real Madrid. They had home court advantage. They had Kalates playing as MVP. Everything kind of went in their favor. I thought they had a decent chance to mix it up and get with 2-0 in Madrid, but eventually they just got lured in that Giannakopoulos madness and everything. So, a fitting end of that season.
Yes, but I mainly mentioned that because of what Luis said about the two teams being quite identical. it's going to be interesting to see how Jaskevičius is going to try and surprise Obradovic, and if he's going to surprise, Obradovic, because sometimes the surprise is the fact that the other guy is just sticking to his plan, you know, and he has nothing else, and you're just expecting him somehow to do something, and he doesn't do it. I am talking about this from the angle of Jaskevičius being brave enough to try and, you know, do something that Obradovic is not expecting at all. Because, for example, last season in the final, Nikola Kalinic made those 3-point shots. I think it was four from four at the very beginning. So Sferopoulos, Olympiakos started with Kem Birch at center, and they decided to give away the 3-point shots for Fenerbahce. So as much as I dislike Sferopoulos, he just tried something, he gambled, it didn't work, fair enough. And I'm very curious to see if Jaskevičius is going to try something similar against his former coach Obradovic.
I think he's going to probably try that lineup with Ulanovas at power forward and three guards, Micić, Pangos, and who's the third? I forgot. I think he's going to try to get the play faster, and but not sure how that would fare, because Fenerbahce, as Rafa said, is very, very, very athletic, and they can also get up and down and turn the game also fast. But they had success slowing the game down and playing with Olympiakos pace, but not sure how they will fare with Fenerbahce. So I think they have that edge, Fenerbahce, in there, but not sure what's gonna happen if they start, if they don't make shots, if somehow they stay in the zone, control defensive rebounding, and just not allow them to get comfortable.
I agree with that.
Not sure if you understood what I had.
I agree. I think sometimes those games turn out to be completely different than we expect them. And I was thinking about that as I was talking about, you know, a game that we're going to talk a lot in the future as well. Maybe it's the worst Final Four game ever, you know. Maybe both teams and both coaches, I don't know, maybe they get very anxious about the game, and maybe, you know, there's a lot of nerves going on. And, you know, the mind games type of coaches that both Obradovic and Jaskevičius are, maybe this just, you know, destroys the game quality wise. Maybe it's just a fight, you know, of who gets this extra rebound and who makes who has the less failed shots in the end. So definitely there is a lot to watch out there. Definitely, from every different angle that one can imagine.
Yeah, I just want to know if Žalgiris are up one with a couple of seconds left, does Malakhnis try take another corner three? that's what we should watch.
That hammer play is gonna show up. I don't know if really to be successful, but I think Željko will be ready for that. These hammer plays for him to run and the shot in the corner, that's not gonna play. that's not gonna work so far.
Yeah.
I think that Fenerbahce will be ready for him. He's pretty much one-dimensional player. He's not gonna offer much besides that three-point shooting. But he's very good with moving off the ball and using those screens. White and Davis that send, especially Jan Kunas. I just can't emphasize how much his screens open the game for Pangos and other guards. He sets really tough screens. They probably bone crushing, but I never had that experience. But I have a feeling they are bone crushing screens. he really can make a pick and free his guard.
Rafa, I think this is a very good time to tell us about your domestic players' quotas.
Well, I mean, it's a bigger conversation for the off season and stuff, but it is quite interesting to look at. And I think a lot of teams in EuroLeague are having this now, how their better players are not necessarily the Americans anymore. It's more either the European or even the homegrown players. And Cheska's an exception here because the really good Russian player, who's Shved, is not playing for them. But even then, I think their two main generators are not American. It's Chacho and De Colo. And instead, they use the American spots for people who are basically, their role is to bring intensity and energy and athleticism. And that's, you know, Corey Higgins, Clyburn, Hines, Othello Hunter. Real Madrid has been having this sort of profile as well recently, although now they have obviously Tompkins there. But, you know, Campazzo, for as much as he had to take on this much bigger role during the season because Yule was injured, his role was supposed to be the energy guy off the bench who comes in intensity and plays really annoying defense. Marcus Slaughter, when he played for Real Madrid, was that sort of player as well. And I think it's quite an interesting shift in the way that teams are built. And it makes sense from a demand and supply perspective. You look for these players in the American market because there's just not that many really athletic European players. And if there are, they're not here. So you kind of try to fill in that void using the American guys. And I think to some extent, this athletic advantage, I think, is going to play quite a big role. And I've already talked about it with the Fenerbahce-Žalgiris matchup. But I do think that one of Fenerbahce's main advantages is just having Nunnally and Wanamaker, who are long, quite stout. They're not extremely tall, but they are quite strong. They can withstand contact. They can switch and not get extremely punished on the block by big guys. They're rangy. They will cover the passing lanes. They will defensive rebound. These American really athletic players, even if they're not in the traditional mold. But yeah, that these American guys, even if they're not in the super scorer mold, I think they have a very big role to play in this Final Four as well.
Especially with Kaunas, like Brandon Davies, although he's been playing exceptional lately, he has a tendency to get in foul trouble. And if he gets in foul trouble early, Vesely, if he's in rhythm, as long as it's not a repeat of Berlin, then yeah, like he could dominate that series definitely, just purely from an athletic standpoint, not even a talent standpoint.
Would you guys connect this with the team chemistry in general? Would you connect these 2 points somehow? Because looking at Žalgiris roster, for example, out of the 10 players that, you know, play more than 10 minutes on average, which is the whole team basically, apart from Valinskas, I think, and Sayus and like Gitis Matsoulis. Out of the other 10, 5 are new Žalgiris players. So Brandon Davies, Vasilije Micic, Axel Tupain, Ben Udrich, Aaron White. So I think you not only you have the least experienced team of this Final Four, but also the team that had the less time to blend in together in terms of individuals, which, of course, it didn't really show in the playoffs or in the rest of the season that much. But maybe in games like a semi-final, maybe it becomes a huge factor. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I agree to an extent. Fenerbahce's had the same team for years now, more or less. I mean, there's a couple of tweaks. You replace, obviously, Bogdanović with Guduric. Udo hasn't been replaced and probably never will be. He was far too good. And Thompson, he just doesn't offer the same things. What I think negates that problem for Kaunas is they're all hungry guys. As I mentioned, hardly any of them had played in EuroLeague. And sorry, Seb, but I'm sure there's a stat that in the Olympiacos series, only one Kaunas player had played in the playoffs before, and he's played 3 games.
Yeah, yeah.
And Spanoulis had 3 finals MVPs.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Sorry to bring it up, but
no,
yeah.
No, it's okay. I knew what I was going into when we decided to do this podcast.
I can't remember who tweeted it, but I was like,
that's the number one reason I'm not preparing to fly to Belgrade anyways. So I'll just hide. If I am offline for 5 days in a row, don't look for me. I will be okay.
I mean, you've always got that all EuroLeague second team to look after and look at fun. Yeah. So it's all good.
And I said that I don't like Spanoulis being there, so it's it only gets worse. Rafa, wanna wrap up this topic before we go to the predictions for the final, the winner?
No, I mean I don't have really much to add at this point. I think it's the conversation about quotas and imports and their role for the off season. Like that would be a much more relevant conversation there.
Sure.
Even with what we learn about that through the Final Four, Final Four, yeah.
Sure. Okay, so do you want to start with predicting stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I can go with what I think is going to happen. I already said I think Cheska will win the semifinal against Real Madrid. I think Fenerbahce will win the semifinal against Žalgiris. And I think Fenerbahce will win the final relatively comfortably. Perhaps more comfortably than their semifinal, to be honest.
All right, and the Final Four MVP is going to be.
Oof, that's a tough question. I'm gonna go with Nunnally, who I think every single time I've seen him play, he's just been very solid and executes. And I don't know that there's any wing player, especially on Real Madrid and perhaps also in Cheska, other than Higgins, who I don't think will be matched up with him, that can coherently defend him.
Does that imply that you believe EuroLeague is going to be brave enough to give a Final Four MVP title to James Nunnally?
Oh, we'll see who else plays at that level. I just don't think Vesely is going to have that big a series. Perhaps Lucas?
I mean, give my guy some love.
Is the other. Yeah.
All right, Edin.
For MVP, I don't know. I thought about Gigi Datome, but not sure he'll get the volume or shots to get this, but probably it's gonna be either Nunnally or some other guard who gets hot at that time or play nice. Yeah, first game from Real and Cheska, I'm leaning Real Madrid.
Okay,
it's gonna be close, but I think Real's gonna win. In the second leg, I think Fenerbahce will win. And in the finals, I think Fenerbahce is taking it home again. Probably easier than versus Žalgiris, but it's going to be a good final. I expect it, at least.
Okay. Luis, what about you? You said Žalgiris in overtime.
Yeah, and I stand by it. Žalgiris in overtime. I expect a lot of messages Saturday morning saying, how did you know?
good.
Rafa's going to love this. I've got Madrid taking Moscow, and then in a Kaunas Madrid final, Madrid.
Yay.
Just. I think it's going to be close.
All right.
And for MVP, Spinoulis. No, I'm just kidding. MVP, I'm going controversial. I'm going Rudy Fernandez.
Awesome. I like it. Vintage.
That's gonna be interesting to see, but I can see if Herald wins, I can see him playing a big role in that.
Yeah, I mean, he's played really well lately, as Rafa said, and Doncic is too hyped up. There's no way he can have the kind of game everyone expects him to have, especially on the other side of the Atlantic.
Good. I mean, guys, you have a free pass for Final Four MVP. Nominations. This other guy nominated James Nunnally. I don't know if you heard before. So I think we will get a free pass. So using this free pass, I'm going to say that I want Real Madrid to win the first semifinal, Žalgiris Kaunas to win the second one. I really want to see a Luka Doncic versus Šarūnas Jasikevičius final. I don't know if this happens, if we have this final. I really have no idea what could happen. Like, the craziest thing might happen. Like, could be a huge blow for could be, I don't know, a 30 points win for Real Madrid, or I don't know, a 15 points win for Žalgiris Kaunas. For the sake of predicting stuff, I'm going to go wild and say Žalgiris Kaunas wins it all. I'm going to nominate Edgar Asulanovas as the MVP. No, I'm not joking. I'm being serious here. And Ioannis Sferopoulos as coach of the season. Sorry, guys. I just had to do this. Sorry.
He has a weak spot for those awful-looking shot releases.
Yeah, I read that you
watch the sprinters.
I read that you
his
don't.
His whole life. This just looks familiar.
I read that you don't like those weird shots. Funny thing about that is, I don't know if you know, Jonas Kazlauskas, when he was coaching Olympiakos, there's a rumor that he kind of banned Printezis from shooting like that in trainings. So he went to the guy and he told me, do you know what? This is not a basketball shot. You cannot do this, you know? And then... I don't know. Like he lost a EuroLeague title by that shot, and now we have Edin really, really disliking this kind of shots. But yeah, Ulanovas is my MVP. I'm sorry. What can I say? It has to be worth it for my team to be out of the Final Four. You know, like it has something good has to come out of this. So yeah. Okay. So
Edgaras is a really cool name. At least, I think I would like to be called Edgaras if I was looking.
I mean, I would be happy to be called any Žalgiris Kaunas player name in this. And yeah, we talk about lack of experience and, you know, not a lot of chemistry and all these things. But imagine how these guys feel when they know that they came out of nowhere and they're in the Final Four and they have a coach that is considered, you know, the next big thing in Europe. And I'm sure they believe that they can do everything. And there was this discussion again from the NBA. I think it happened in one of the cleaning the glass topics. I'm not sure if you know the website. It's a website for advanced statistics. Yeah, Ben Falk, yeah, exactly. And he was talking about narratives and how in sports we like to stick to stories and we like to say that, okay, Toronto Raptors are chokers and, you know, this guy is not a leader and he always commits turnovers in the most important moments. And we stick to them because it's our way to analyze the game and it's our way to understand it best. But I think he was making the point that, okay, Toronto Raptors are chokers, but what if LeBron was not playing against them? They would win it, okay? And if you consider them to be chokers, then you don't think LeBron James is, you know, probably one of the best players in the history of basketball. And I think as much as we love narratives, because that's one of the main reasons that we watch sports anyways, I think there is some truth to them. I think there is some truth to them, and we can talk on and on about
mental preparation is also as important as a physical one.
Yeah.
If you get to those narratives to get in your head that you're gonna choke, you're eventually gonna choke.
Exactly.
If you don't think you're gonna make that shot, nobody else will. So if you don't prepare yourself mentally for that, if you listen to what other people are saying about you, and those people probably don't even know how hard you worked for that, how much hours of training and practice you put into this, and what else you did to excel and improve yourself. If you just listen to it and give that importance, it will probably affect you. It will probably make you a choker. It will make you a not winner. It will make you turn the ball over, miss an important shot. I don't know. Things that probably you wouldn't do in any other case.
You put it much better than I was trying to. That was exactly my point.
Yeah.
All right.
And just quickly, while we're on narratives, and we don't need to have a very long conversation on this since this podcast is already going to be eternal. But can we get, like, what do you guys, who do you guys think is the MVP for the EuroLeague season?
Pangos, no question.
Kevin Pangos, okay. I see a lot of love coming out from Lewis for Žalgiris Kaunas, and I have to say I like that. Why Pangos? Why
it's
not?
Probably the green color.
Yeah, I gotta go green. No, for me, like Doncic, no. I'll take nothing away. I'll take nothing away. He was incredible at the start of the season, and he carried a shell of a Real Madrid team pretty far in the season. And Kalathis, he done it again. Like, his stats dropped off a little in the playoffs, but he couldn't carry arguably one of the most loaded, healthy teams to the Final Four. Pangos took a team of nobodies to the Final Four. For me, there's no Žalgiris without Pangos. Pangos, MVP.
All right, all right. Case closed, I think, guys. We cannot argue with this guy.
Yeah, don't do it. Right.
with all due respect to Pangos' season and what Doncic did in all these injuries that happened to Real Madrid and eventually hampered even him, he kind of lost his step. He probably took the fake injury so they can rest him a little. He started missing free throws. He was upset. He barely couldn't run or walk anymore. I think that the job that probably got forgotten because Panathinaikos got eliminated in these playoffs. Kalathis had an amazing season. The MVP worthy one. He was close to having triple doubles. I don't think he had one, but he was close several times. He also played amazingly. He played the defense. He was kind of the engine of that team, along with the Gist and the Singleton. But eventually, even though he wasn't the greatest shooter, he wasn't the guy who was gonna get the buckets every single time. He played the important role in this Panathinaikos run, and he's probably the main reason I put them to win. But eventually, they just, as we discussed already, kind of choked in that second game. They kind of outplayed Real Madrid in that first game. It was kind of ugly to watch after. I think first half that was they basically shut them down.
All right, Rafa, I think you can have the last word on this since you brought it up. So I'll go before you, and I just want to say two things. First one is, and with all caution, because just by looking at the statistical number, you can probably not say a lot of things, like if you just take it out of context. But Real Madrid is number one team in assist to turnovers ratio. I think they're somewhere 1.7, if I'm not mistaken. And to think that they manage this with a roster consisting of Luka Doncic, Facundo Campazzo, Randle. I think this is fascinating. I think this is very impressive. So, although Doncic is probably not as good as we expected him to be, and this means that he wasn't, you know, extremely good. I would just go and give the MVP award to both of Doncic and Kalathis, because also on the other side, Kalathis, I think without him, again, Panathinaikos is a team that is not even in the top eight of the whole of EuroLeague. I think they're, for all the very good individuals that they have, I think their roster is not structured very, very wisely. So I think without Calafis, they are a team that is left out of the top eight. So I would just go ahead and give it to both of them, and I would just, you know, innovate a little bit. I don't know. What do you think, Rafa?
As co-MVPs.
Yeah, co-MVPs, exactly. And I don't get, again, we go to the previous discussion about Pablo Laso. Sometimes being second is, you know, of course you're not first, of course you didn't win the title, of course you're not the winner. History is going to remember the first guys and all this stuff, but being at the top consistently is... I think it's very impressive. It's very impressive, and I don't get why we have to just find the best player. And I think such titles could be shared because every player plays in different teams as well. There's different playing styles, and you know sometimes it just happens that a team's playing style is benefiting an individual quite a lot. So he signs much more than some other guy. So yeah, I would just have co-MVPs. What about you, Rafa?
I think I have two opinions here. I think, like, first thing, I think Calathis should win it. I think he was the best player during the season, during the whole of the season, and he was the most consistently excellent player. But I think Doncic is going to take it. And the reason I brought this up after the conversation we had is simply narratives. I think there is a narrative there about Doncic being this like wonder kid, and he's really young and he dominated the EuroLeague and stuff, and only part of it is true, but I think the narrative is going to have him taking it in the end.
Who would you give it to?
I would give it to Calathis.
Okay, so no co-MVPs, no second thoughts about Calathis.
No, I would give it to Galatas. I think he was the best player during the season. Okay. But I do think Doncic is going to take it.
Okay, all right. So guys, I think we're finished. If Žalgiris wins this, or if they win just the semi-final in overtime, you know who to mention on Twitter. He's your guy. He can get you reads, probably. And I think we're good to go and just wait for Friday, extra to add.
Just count us overtime. Penguins MVP.
So I think we can all say good night to everyone that listened to this. All right, guys, thank you very very much for joining me.
Cheers, thanks.
Cheers, see ya.
Good night.
Bye.